The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
I have a last name that I can pronounce. I can barely get Kellerman out of my mouth, especially fast. Every time I say my last name, that's Kellerman. I can't say my own last name. All right, brain damage, I can't say my own last name?
Yes, it's like you're skipping a syllable. I hear Kellerman.
But can't say Kellerman quickly.
It's difficult. Kellerman.
Right, you kind of R goes away, kind of.
Yeah, Kellerman.
Right. Yeah.
It's like a nice little soccer team from east side of north side of England or something, plays in the lower league or something.
Kellerman,
No, Kellerman, the way you say
Kellerman.
It,
Kellerman. Yeah. If I could say Keller, if it's Max Keller, easy. But Kellerman, I don't know. Anyway, Gus Edwards is going to start at running back for Baltimore. Justice Hill and Tyson Williams, one of 10 players promoted from the practice squad, or two of 10 players, that would be Justice Hill and Tyson Williams, will back up Edwards. Dobbins had just positioned himself to take over as Baltimore's lead back with Ingram out before testing positive. Ingram, a Pro Bowl back last year, has slowly been phased out of the offense. You know who I think got running backs really well, like depicted what they're up against and how they age? And it's really the only sport that's like this, where you can be a stud one year and the next year you're cut. It's not just like you have a diminished role. It's like, see you later. Playmakers. Remember that series on ESPN? It was a dramatic series on ESPN in 2002, maybe? Ooh,
that was early 2000s.
Yeah, like 2002. Yeah. It was almost 20 years ago. It was really, really good. But it was a little too realistic a depiction of the league, and the NFL didn't like it. And obviously, you know, we're business partners, right? ESPN, the NFL. And I understand that. Like, I understand wanting to be a good partner, but it's unfortunate in a way because, look, the NFL, you can't really argue with them in terms of the way they market their product. They are the big, they're a juggernaut in entertainment business, right? In entertainment media. But, in fact, the most powerful entertainment entity in the United States is, I think, fair to say, it is the NFL. But I don't know. I think sometimes they miss opportunities to be more interesting, right? Like maybe that does hurt their bottom line, but it would make it more interesting. And at any rate, the depiction of the running back, and I forgot the name of the character. He was a stud running back, like an all-pro type, running back, as I recall. And he shows up to camp the next year, and they show him some film. They got a young kid that they just drafted, and they show him some film, and they clock him in the 40 or whatever it is, or it's some interval of, some distance. And they say, see, you just lost point whatever tenths or hundredths of a second. And that's the difference. And they show him in the film between that hole closing or you taking it to the house, right? Like, that's the difference. It is brutal. So, like, Mark Ingram goes from Pro Bowl to he's being phased out of the offense. And as I said earlier in the show, what did Casey Joyner, the football scientist, tell us about running backs? The line. A bad run blocking means 2 to 3 yards a carry. It doesn't matter if you have Jim Brown and Barry Sanders in your backfield. Good run blocking means 7 yards a carry. It doesn't matter if you got a bum in the backfield. Now, a great running back might get you 10 instead of 7. That's a good premium over the 7. But that's with good run blocking. And by the way, you'll take 7. You know, like Eddie, you take Eddie. So running backs really just have a marginal kind of impact, in fact. The reason you think they have an outsized impact is because you see running backs on teams that get run blocking break off big plays constantly. You're like, oh, they must be great. But if you replace that back with just an average or even a below average back, you'd still think the back was very good. Not as great, but very good. You'd be happy with the returns you were getting. So Ingram, you know, but, and then on top of that, as I said, I referenced the playmakers thing, that, you know, if you lose a little quarter step, that could be the difference, you know, between being really good and not so good. Or at least, even if it's not that, you know, I thought you said you get 7 yards no matter what with good run blocking. Right, but why pay a veteran when you can get a little more premium, a little more speed for a lot less money with a young player? At any rate, they're both out. No one's going to, you know, they don't have their running backs today, the Ravens. But you know what? You know when they didn't have their running backs? The last time they played. You know when? The last time RG3 started a game was week 17 of last season. Pittsburgh was 8-7. They had a chance to end a season without Ben Roethlisberger at 9-7. They're playing their arch rivals, and because the Ravens had locked up the number one seed, they sat everybody. No one played. No Ingram, no Lamar Jackson, no nothing. The Ravens beat the brakes off them, 28-10. This is a big-time rivalry. This is the best rivalry in football at the moment because it has everything. It has history, tradition. It has greatness in the past, in the present. It was competitive back in the day. They both won Super Bowls in this century. It's competitive today. They're storied franchises. They always play each other tough. And on top of that, entering this season in this century, they've played 44 times, 22-22. Virtually no point differential. Like, all the numbers are the same. It's totally evenly matched. Ryan Clark has told me that the best time to play the Ravens or Steelers, and he obviously played on that in that rivalry. He was a Super Bowl winner with the Steelers. Defensive back, best time to play either team is the week after they play each other because there's an emotional letdown, because they got bumps and bruises in a different kind of way. Not dirty games, but hard-hitting games. It's a really, really great matchup, even though the Ravens come in compromised. They have no positive tests Wednesday, a source, the Ravens. That would be today. A source told ESPN's, our very own, Adam Schefter, just hours before kickoff with the Steelers. So that was it. This is the first day in out of 10 straight days. This is day 11. The previous 10 straight days, at least one Baltimore Raven tested positive for the coronavirus. At least 14 Baltimore players have tested positive during that time, including 7 Pro Bowl players. We got Perk on the line yet? All right, Perk's coming up. I want to ask him who wins the title this year. Let me give it away. Lakers. Who wins the MVP is a good question, though. Is it going to be LeBron again at his age? Every year LeBron does this, he's resetting the record. And eventually he won't be able to do it. What percentage of KD is going to be here this year? I think if he's 80%, that's a win. But if it's 80%, that's more like Paul George than KD. Kendrick Perkins now on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. What's up, Big Perk?
What's up, Max? Hey, Max, say it ain't so. Did you give up on your boy Kawhi Leonard today?
Long time ago, Perk. Long time ago. You got to catch him.
Wow.
No, here it is. Kawhi's great. Kawhi is almost always clutch. Wasn't this last season in a Game 7 when they needed him, but almost always clutch. My problem is this, Perk. They needed a floor general to organize the offense. They did not get Rondo. They did not get CP3. They did not get Drew Holiday. I like to pick up a Serge Ibaka, but that's not enough. So they, you know, if your crime partner goes away under pressure, which Paul George does, how are you supposed to beat LeBron and AD on a team that got better? Who wins? You tell me, who wins the title this year? Who wins MVP?
Oh, you don't have to ask me. I already know who's going to win it. You could call it a repeat. Hand it over to the Lakers, all right? I mean, they got better. They upgraded. They get rid of Danny Green contract for almost $16 million a year and add a Wesley Matthews, who I think was even an even trade or upgrade for $3.6 million. So you're looking at the Lakers roster, and then you add a Marcus Gasol along with Anthony Davis, along with a Dennis Schroeder and Montrezl Harrell.
Schroeder's an upgrade over Rondo regular season, but maybe not playoffs, Perk.
Well, we have to see it. We have to see it. Because, look, everyone that I've noticed that plays alongside LeBron James is capable of elevating their game in the playoffs. KCP did that this year. So
he did.
I'm looking at a guy like Dennis Schroeder who already have the tenacity, who already have that edge, who already have that swag about themselves, who don't lack confidence at all. And you put him alongside LeBron James and Anthony Davis, it's going to be dangerous, along with Montrezl Harrell. But, Max, look, you gave up on Kawhi like you gave up on your Knicks. I mean, that was like – that was a quick turnaround.
Well, when you say gave up on Kawhi
– you was gone?
When you say gave up on Kawhi, he's the second-best player. Like, you know, like I put him ahead of LeBron for the following reasons. I never said he was as good as LeBron in his prime. But the last time we saw LeBron, he was coming back off an injury. So given LeBron's age, given the fact that Kawhi had just won finals MVP, and given the fact that LeBron at times at the end of games, at least earlier in his career, looked a little hesitant because he's not a great free throw shooter. Whereas Kawhi, to me, always looked like he had ice water in his veins. Never cared about how big or small the moment was. Same dude. A killer. But Kawhi needs all those little edges to consider him the best. If he has no margin for error. If he chokes in a game seven in the fourth quarter, then there's no way I can make the argument against LeBron, who is otherwise a better player. Who do you think wins MVP this year?
Max, you know what? I haven't decided all the way, but it's either Anthony Davis and Luka Doncic.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good couple of picks. You know who else might have a big season if he could stay healthy?
Who is that?
Embiid. Because Simmons is not – he's a scorer, but only around the basket. And they got shooters everywhere. They're not going to be able to double Embiid this year. You know, Seth Curry and Danny Green are going to – it's not Josh Richardson. It's going to be really hard to double Embiid.
No, I agree. And look, a lot of people have their criticism about Doc Rivers and, you know, how he ended with the Clippers. And I get that, right? I get it. Although I didn't think he deserved to get fired, but whatever. All right, he's in Philly. One thing you cannot take away from Doc Rivers is offensively, he knows how to put guys in position to be successful. You want me to give you an example? Take Kendrick Perkins, for example. Mm. Under Doc Rivers, I averaged my career high, 11 points a game. Hey, man, 10.8 points a game under Doc Rivers. Shot.
Why? What did he do for you?
I'm just saying, he put me in position, Max, where I was able to duck in certain areas. He put me in position where I would run pick and rolls with Rondo, where he would have Ray Allen on the strong side, where they wouldn't be able to help off of Ray Allen. And when I would roll to the basket, I would get easy dunks. Those type of things. So him drawing up plays for like a Joel Embiid, oh, it's going to be dangerous because he's going to put him in position and utilize his strength. Because everybody talk about Joel back to the basket, get down on the low block. But if you notice, every time he get on the low block, what do? He face up. Joel is a guy that loves to face up. He loves to beat you off the dribble. He's not a guy that loves to pound, pound, pound.
But he can Doc pound. Dribbles.
He can, but he don't. That's not his strong point. Doc Rivers is going to put him at his strong point. Watch. He's going to do what he did for DeAndre Jordan. When DeAndre Jordan was under Doc Rivers, he was playing some of the best basketball of his life.
So basically, what as long as Embiid has, let's see, who do you have there? You have Rondo, Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, and Kevin Garnett.
Hey, Max.
No kidding,
Max.
You averaged 10.8 points that year. They're leaving you alone.
Max, I'm just saying, look, I still had to get it done.
Yes, you did.
You know what I mean? Four All-Stars. I'm on the team with four All-Stars, and I still average double-figure points.
Not bad, Perk. Not bad. can't take that away from you. Can KD come all the way back this year? Here's my thing, Perk. If KD's 80% of himself, forget about exactly the game. That's more or less a Paul George-level player. And when I look at the Brooklyn Nets, if it's Kyrie, Paul George, LeVert, and Dinwiddie, to me that's not a finals team. That's a conference finals team. Is KD getting all the way back? And if so, what does that mean for the Nets?
That means that they're coming out of the East.
Yeah.
If KD is almost KD, they're coming out of the Eastern Conference with the team that they have right now. They're not lacking anything. They have shooting. They have scoring. They have rim protection. They have two certified centers over there. You're talking about DeAndre Jordan and Allen, right? Both of those guys are rim protectors, live threats at the rim. And then you add in a LeVert, along with a Spencer Dinwiddie coming off the bench, if they decide to keep him, this team is going to be electrifying.
Okay, now you and I have gone over this. You know, look, Mavs Lakers are highlighting the Christmas slate, but the Mavs aren't going to have Porzingis on Christmas. But hopefully they will have him later in the season. And Perk, when I think of Luka, who you just said is one of your MVP candidates, mine too, this man almost averaged a 30-point triple-double shooting 32% from three. Let's say that goes up to 35%. He's a little more experienced. His defense gets a little better. And Porzingis, people, so much of this stuff is perception. Think of Porzingis on the Knicks, how he was ascending on the Knicks. He was a franchise centerpiece. Then he got hurt, takes a year to get back to where you were. By the playoffs, if he's healthy, those two are going to be a whole lot. They are my number one threat to the Lakers. Who's yours?
I like Dallas, man. And don't forget, Max, before Porzingis in the bubble, you have to don't leave that out. Porzingis and Luka was the highest scoring duo in the bubble before he got hurt. So don't leave that out. I'm not knocking the Mavs. I actually like the Mavs. I thought still they shouldn't have got rid of Steph Curry, but that's another story. But listen, I'm trying to tell you, man, the Phoenix Suns, man. Yep. Listen to what I tell you this.
I'm with you on the Suns.
Because here's why. Here's why, Max. Let me tell you. If you look at what Chris Paul did with the Oklahoma City Thunder team, and I'm not knocking that team, right? I'm not knocking Shea Alexander or Dennis Schroeder or Steven Adams or Gallinari, but when you go and you compare him up with a Devin Booker, we're talking about a guy who could possibly lead, who have the capabilities of leading the league in scoring.
He looks like a little smaller, not quite as good Kobe Bryant. Like he could score from anywhere.
Max, you know what? That might have been the smartest thing you said in 2020. That comparison was really good. And I'm looking at this Phoenix Suns, along with what they already have, along with Monty Williams, who's going to get the best out of them, and DeAndre Ayton, who's going to start the season off fresh, not suspended. See, you have to understand, look, when you're suspended and you come back to a team, one, you have to get your rhythm back, but you also have to get your mental back. That messed with you mentally. And he always was fighting it, I could tell, because, you know, at one point he would be in the starting lineup, one point he would be coming off the bench. And I think Monty was sending a message to him that, no, I need you to be dominant every single night. And when he started doing that, Monty said, here goes your starting role again. Now, don't slack up. So he held them accountable. But you have DeAndre Ayton, who's fresh with a veteran leader like Chris Paul, and a Devin Booker and Cam Johnson, all these pieces they have around them, it's about to be a wrap.
I'm still waiting for Monty Williams to pan out as a draft pick for the Knicks.
But
hey, listen, what they took him like sixth or something. They took Monty Williams pretty high. No, listen, I agree with you about the Suns. Here's the thing. When you think about the unknown on that team, they got two legit 3-and-D guys at forwards, right? Devin Booker is like a little mini Kobe Bryant. And Chris Paul is a great player who's still playing at like all-star plus levels. So really, what's the unknown in the starting five? It's DeAndre Ayton. That's the unknown. And the guy's already an above-average NBA player. If Chris Paul gets the best out of DeAndre Ayton, the Suns are a problem. The great Kendrick Perkins, ladies and gentlemen. You hear what Maggie said about the Bears? What they need to turn it around? Think it's his fault? Think he blew this season, Chicago fans? I'll tell you what to think.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Matt Nagy, all I've heard people talk about him be is a quarterback guru.
Every freaking coach on the staff, every player better wake up, start understanding where we're at.
He did this to himself. And if your intent was to play Nick Foles all along, you should have did it at the beginning of the season.
Have some personal pride. Have some pride into who we're playing for and why we do this.
You can save we need to find ourselves our personal pride. The time to say that was a month ago.
Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. Almost time for kickoff between the Ravens and Steelers. You can reach me at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. No, everything that people are saying is not true about Chicago. None of that stuff you just heard is true. Like, who was that, Greeny, who said the time to say about personal pride was weeks ago? I mean, I understand what he's saying. He's not wrong. It's fine, but I don't think it would have made a difference. Keyshawn saying they started Foles and it's no good. I disagree. The issue is one thing with Chicago. They have no offensive line, period. That's the whole problem. No offensive line. They have a thin receiving core, it's true, but no offensive line. If you were, if I had to design a football team, and I have like 10 spots where I can put all my resources, right? Where am I going to put all my resources? Like, what 10 spots do I want covered out of a roster of 50, right? Who I want a stud quarterback, of course, everyone does. My next five spots will be stud offensive linemen. I want a stud quarterback, five studs on the offensive line. That's six spots, right? Then I would probably take a couple of defensive tackles. Well, if you're going to do a 3-4, I guess, you know, you could do one, you know, nose tackle. I want a defensive end to go get the quarterback. So what am I up to? 6, 7, 8? And I want a corner, a stud corner. And if I need two defensive tackles because I'm running a 4-3, fine. Then I'm already at 10. Otherwise, I'll take two corners. In other words, I want to protect the quarterback. I want to block for the run. And on the defensive side, I want to collapse the pocket. That's what I'd want. And everything else, you figure it out. And by the way, what they find with the offensive line in terms of protecting the quarterback, it's not that you need the most amazing left tackle. It's that you can't have any weaknesses on the line. The line has to work together well, and each individual needs to be able to win their matchup more often than not, right? And because it protects the quarterback, which gives him more time to throw, which makes the other secondary worse, which makes your wideouts better, it blocks for the run. And what I say about the Casey Joyner thing, run blocking, an average running back will get 7 yards a carry. Seven. And a great one will get 10. Improves the run game. It keeps your defense off the field, which means it improves your defense. It is the only facet of the game that affects every other facet of the game is your offensive line. It's the line of scrimmage. And on the other side, give me a couple defensive tackles to collapse, make sure the quarterback can't step in. There's no pocket. Nothing's clean. And then, of course, you want a defensive end to go get the guy. But it could be a linebacker, too, an outside linebacker. But the point is, the Bears have no offensive line. And because they have no offensive line, the quarterback has no time to throw the ball. And because he has no time to throw the ball, every secondary he faces is better. And because every secondary he faces is better, his wideouts are worse. And because he has no offensive line, they can't run block. And because they can't run block, doesn't matter who you have out of the backfield, they're not going to get any yards. And because of that, the defense is going to be exhausted because they're always on the field. You can't get them off the field. Or keep them off the field. It's the offensive line. It's not any of this other stuff. They're garbage. And by the way, even like going to Nick Foles early, look at the Bears' schedule early. I got to get this up in front of me. Just take a look at the Bears' schedule. You really want to know what happened? It's the schedule. They had soft games early that Trubisky was winning. Here it is. Remember when they were doing so great? Mina Kimes has brought this up on NFL Live. I recommend the show highly. Mina Kimes and Dan Orlovsky and Marcus Spears. And Ryan Clark's on that show a bunch. But they beat Detroit week one. Big deal, Trubisky. They beat the Giants week two before the Giants were really playing well by their standards. Big deal. They beat the Falcons, but remember, Foles had to come into that game to beat the Falcons, and these were close games. 4 points over the Bears, 6 over the Giants, low-scoring game, 17-13. 4 points over the Falcons. Foles finished that game. Then they lose to the Colts. Yeah, because you know why? It's the first good team they played. They lost 19-11. Then they beat the Bucs 20-19. Beat the Bucs. Foles put him in position to kick a field goal. Remember the Brady forgot the number of days. He forgot he thought it was he was on fourth down when the game was over. Then they beat the Panthers. Then they played the Rams. It's a terrible matchup for the Bears. If you don't have an offensive line, what I say, you want an offensive line. And on the other side, give me a great defensive tackles. Who do the Rams have? Forget about anyone who can get pressure on the outside. Forget about any corner who can do work. Who do the Rams have? Aaron Donald is coming, and you don't have an offensive line. Good luck. They got crushed 24-10. Then they barely lost to the Saints by a field goal, 26-23. But the Saints are really good. So they have one quality win against the Bucs. And otherwise, they lost to the Colts, the Rams, and the Saints. It doesn't matter if Trubisky or Foles was playing those games. They were going to lose them. The only difference is because you had Foles against the Bucs, you beat the Bucs. If you had had a Trubisky, you'd have lost. Then they lose to the Titans. And by the way, and then against the Vikings, Foles gets hurt. Then they lose to the Packers. You think, had they done it reverse, because Stephen A. was saying, he made a good point. You know, do it reverse. Save Foles till the end of the year. Then you bring him in, limiting him, because he's not mobile behind a bad offensive line, limiting his exposure to injury. So let's say Foles would have played the Packers. What'd they lose to the Packers? 41-25. You think Foles is going to be the difference in that game? There's nothing Nagy could have done without an O-line, period. And so Bears fans, I know Chicago's such a crazy football town, and you've been waiting since 85. And I know you haven't had a great quarterback this whole time. But you got to get the line straight. If you had a good offensive line, Foles would have looked really good this year. If you would have put Nick Foles on Tampa Bay, do you think they're worse than 7-5? They have Tom Brady. You think they're worse than 7-5? I don't. I think they have the exact same record as with Tom Brady. Exact same. And if you put Tom Brady in Chicago behind that line, you think they're any better? If they are, marginally. Marginally better. But actually, Brady's career could be over if he was behind that line.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
I gotta take some calls eventually, don't I, Raj? I think I should.
Well, you had so many opinions. You were killing it with all these opinions.
I have a lot of opinions.
You gave them. Yeah, but you didn't give it out with your heart, you know, with your chest.
888-SAY-ESPN. That's 729-3776. I'm starting to think I'm coming up with a game to play. I remember how they said, like, if I could have 10 slots above average. There are 22 starters on an NFL team, right? I'm coming up with the rules of a game we're going to play on this show. How to construct a team. All right, Raj, where's my imaging?
You heard First Take?
At least it's good to hear your voice finally, because yeah. I know on First Take, I only hear you on the intro and outro.
Now hear Max's last take.
I'm not.
We've got to play another game first. Yeah, I know, but we got some tweets. We got to take care of some business there on the Max Kellerman. I know Twitter feed today. Got a couple of tweets. First from Reek. Reek wants to know, at Reek, is Carson Wentz even an NFL starter? Not just for the Eagles, but is he a starter?
Not on the Eagles. No, he's not. If he is, like, here's an idea, and I mentioned this weeks ago, I don't know if he has enough value anymore, but he has such an immovable contract, right? But what if you were to swap him for Nick Foles? What if the Bears thought, a mobile guy, like a Trubisky, although Trubisky's faster, but Wentz is mobile, and a guy who can throw it down the field like Foles, because Trubisky can't do that, right? Could you get the Bears to bite on that? I don't know. I don't know. But right now, he's the worst starting quarterback in football at this moment. Any other tweets, or do you want me to take a phone call now? News from Max Kellerman Nation. Reek just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed. James in Alabama, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max. I'm a big Hawks fan, and so I kind of wanted to give the Hawks some love as perhaps the top six seed in the East, given the revamped roster and kind of wanted to get your thoughts on it.
Dude, you have to remind me, what are all the moves that the Hawks have made in the offseason?
We signed Bogdan 4 years. We signed Danilo Gallinari 3 years.
Yeah.
Something that won't be talked about much, but John Collins, 20-10, his second year, he was suspended for 25 games last year, and that really hurt us. But I also want to talk about Trae Young for a second because, you know, on draft night when the Hawks traded Trae Young, and I speak for most of the Hawks fans when I say that I still wish we would have had Luka over Cam and Cam Reddish and Trae Young. But Max, Trae was 30-9 last year, playing with 42-year-old Vince Carter, Damian Jones.
But the fact, look, listen, I mean, here's the reality about Trae. I know what it is to be a Hawks fan because I was a Knicks fan for so many years. And so, like, when you're good, you're not quite good enough, and sometimes you're not even good. I get it. And you want to love the guy that you got, and Trae Young is a nice player. Luka Doncic is in such a different galaxy from Trae Young. Trae Young shoots it a lot, and he shoots it well, but there are better shooters. He's too small to defend. He is... What I fear about Trae Young is that he's a nice scorer on an okay team. but can he be a great scorer on a great team? That I don't know. And that was a disastrous Doncic trade. Just imagine where your franchise would be if you had Luka Doncic. The much, much better player than Trae Young. And I like Trae Young. By the way, Gallinari's a nice pickup, overpaid for him, but he's a good player. News from Max Kellerman Nation. James just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. Hawks fan. I mean, the Atlanta Hawks.
Hey, you got another one on Twitter. Another one on Twitter. I know you know the fight's coming up this week with Errol Spence.
Game, but go ahead. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You want to do your game that bad?
No, I can't.
Come on, now you know how hyped it up. Let me
tell me the Errol Spence. No. It's still half-baked. Go ahead.
Gio, spelled two different ways with J-O and Jaya, wants to know, honest opinion, Errol Spence, Crawford in the ring right now, who wins?
I like Crawford, 51-49 type fight. Ooh. By the way, in the history of boxing, almost never, show me a fight where there are two guys in or around their primes, in or around their best divisions, both undefeated, both boxer punchers, can really box and can really hit, both with good resumes, in a 50-50 fight that would determine the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. I don't know if it's ever been like that quite. Like, Hearns and Sugar Ray Leonard, I'm not saying it's the greatest fight of all time. I'm saying, like, all those criteria, Hearns and Leonard, Leonard had the loss to Duran going in. He avenged it, but still, he's a one-loss fighter. Trinidad and De La Hoya were both undefeated. The fight was a stinker, as it turned out. And by the way, the winner was not going to be the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world, because Roy Jones was around back then. Like, this is by far the best fight that could be made in boxing, is Spence and Crawford. Spence is fighting Danny Garcia, who's a very good fighter, but Spence, he loses to Garcia, it will be, people will think, because Spence had the car crash. He's expected to beat Garcia otherwise, although at the very top of the sport, like, he barely got by Sean Porter, right? Danny Garcia is really good. Keith Thurman barely beat Danny Garcia. A lot of people for a while thought Thurman was second best in the division to Spence. But at any rate, it's a really good fight. If Spence wins, the cry for him to fight Crawford, the voices will be raised about. And then the question is, will the PBC and Top Rank do business? Or do people believe Crawford will leave Top Rank and cross the street, join the PBC, and then they make the fight? But what if Crawford stays with Top Rank? Then, you know, people are going to have to do business. Going to get to more NBA storylines tomorrow. And finally, my game, the rules to my brand new game. Lodge wouldn't let me get to the next one.
Thanks for listening to the Max Kellerman Show. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, or wherever you stream your audio.